This is Culture Afternoon with Christian Bell on 4680Q.
And yes, this is Culture Afternoon. I'm Christian Bell, and we're right on cue on 4680Q, right down in downtown beautiful Niagara Falls, which is a thriving place with a lot of character and different businesses and some theater, performance theater, and there's all kinds of culture down here. There's art galleries. Mr. Steve Wilson has opened up a beautiful gallery down here. Come down and check that out. So, also like to thank our sponsor, Nioma, the Niagara Institute of Music and Arts. If you've just bought your dream guitar and you need some lessons, you know, you want to really impress your friends or put on a show, or get down to Nioma. It's right downtown here in downtown Niagara Falls on Queen Street. And you can take guitar lessons, drum, you want to beat on the drum all day, drum lessons. They've got piano. My son Jay's piano down here, a wonderful facility here. Singing lessons, all kinds of musical programs. Events going on. They have camps for kids and special programs, other than music. So, Nioma, right down next to Taps, for all your music lesson needs and other things. So today we're going to focus on art out on the streets. Public art. You know, I'm not talking about rock and roll, you know, down out there on a Friday night. I'm talking about, sometimes it's temporary, but usually permanent. Art such as sculptures or even fine art that's out on the street in public or in public spaces, such as the reception area of the hospital, or you can have it down anywhere, like in a hotel lobby. But there's sculptures around town. We've got the Water Molecule, which is a wonderful sculpture down by City Hall at the end of Queen there, in a park, and that's wonderful art. And Niagara Falls needs more of that art. And so we're going to talk about that, public art. You can do it at home, art, put it up on the wall. We enjoy it, whether it's photography or somebody's fine art, or you purchase some art, or you're a collector, or it's a panel that you got from China or something. So we've got art in our homes. We've got to need to do it out on the street. And today we're going to talk about the importance of art out on the street. Public art, 24/7, to be seen. It's free. You can go out and see it. It's not always going to be normal or what you expect. It's going to catch you by surprise. And so we're going to talk a lot about this, and also how art can form communities as well, it's a celebration of our in our communities. There's ways of getting this art. We don't have to spend taxes. We don't have to. We can get it sustainably with no new taxes. We're going to talk a bit about that as well. How do we get art out on the streets, public art, with no new taxes? And also we're going to talk a bit about the importance of funding the arts as well. So, and having an art reserve fund where we can put the money and keep it from year to year. and use the art funds for special events such as city anniversaries or things like that, where we can put the money, have the money put aside that we were accumulating in a public art reserve fund, with perhaps like a quarter of a percent of funding from the city budget to the art reserve fund or to culture. So a way of getting art with no new taxes, or sustainably funded art, is a formula that many Canadian cities are already using. There's dozens of them. It's called 1% for public art. And some of these Canadian cities have already allocated 1% of the construction budget of all new civic buildings and spent that money on public art. So it's 1% of the construction budget of any civic building, a library, a fire station, a new city hall, anything that's civically funded, a civic funded building project, 1% of that project goes to putting public art on that property. This was very successful. Niagara Falls, the city of Niagara Falls and the Niagara region have not done this yet. They even, at the time when I was proposing the 1% for public art to the city and the region, they were building the Niagara Regional Police Services headquarters at Highway 420 in Stanley. And it was a certified green building, LEED Silver. The headquarters, the police headquarters building, had no provisions for public art. So here we had a $70 million building right in one of the busiest intersections in the Niagara region, 420 and Stanley, and there was no public art going up. So this was a great opportunity to get some art in a high-profile area, right at that police station, a giant spire or something, or a sundial or something like that. So we pointed out the absence of public art to our friends, neighbors, and many others in our community. And they agreed unanimously that public buildings in general and the Niagara Regional Cop Shop in particular should have had public art. But they didn't want to pay for the new art with new taxes. And so, I'd researched and discovered that dozens of other Canadian cities already have programs in place whereby 1% of the construction budget of all new civic buildings is allocated for public art. Those were cities like Victoria, Vancouver, Surrey, Calgary, Edmonton, Thunder Bay, Ottawa, Hamilton, Toronto, the entire province of Quebec, and Moncton. Even Helsinki in Finland is doing 2% of public art. So I recommended that the city of Niagara Falls and the Niagara region follow this direction and implement a requirement that all new civic buildings provide 1% of their total construction budget for new public art. Also would have a public art reserve fund, and the current funding allocation for arts and culture. This is back in 2014, pardon me, when this report was put together. It was only $19,500. I think the funding's gone up, but it's always under scrutiny, and it's never enough. Basically, if you fund nothing, you get nothing. We'd like to see an increase, of course, in the funding. So we put that in Public Art Reserve Fund, where we can hold monies. Once they're in, they're locked in. They're in trust. So we needed to up the ante for arts funding from its present one, or that was 1914, or 2014, pardon me, 1.5%. So all civic buildings should install new art funded by a 1% of the building's construction budget. A realistic public art reserve should be established that best serves our present and future civic needs. So that's 1%. Now we're gonna let's take a moment here, and we're gonna hear from somebody who's going to talk about the merits of public art. This is Jody Carroll. She's going to talk about public art and how it enhances our community. And she's the director of recreation, or was. This was a talk a while ago. Director of recreation, Rockford Park District, which is, I believe, in Rockford, Illinois. Jody Carroll has been there, employee there, it looks like, for 24 years. So let's have a listen to see what she has to say about public art and community. 4680Q, Culture Afternoon, Christian Bell.
Thank you all for being here. It is my honor, my pleasure to be here this morning to talk with you about the Rockford Park District Public Art Collection. I'm a little choked up after Candy's speech. That was really, really impactful to me, because we, too, have an incredible opportunity in our community with public art, just as she has shown in her community. We can do it here, too. I'm going to talk a little bit about why public art is important to our community, and then I'm going to introduce you to those pieces that you've probably been driving by for many years and not knowing how the story is that they came about to our community. Public art. When we look at the infrastructure of our community, police and fire and all those things that are very important to our community, you might wonder why public art is important to our community. We also know that quality of life is critical to all of us. When you look at those things that make a community stand apart, public art is part of that. It's a tangible reflection of the quality of life that we have in our community, in addition to our beautiful parks and our other opportunities here. When we have public art, when we have beautiful parks, it gives us a positive feeling about our community. It also gives us a perception of safety, that the community cares about itself. It makes people want to come here, work here, play here, and learn here. Quality of life is cited as one of the top three reasons that businesses relocate to a community, so we also are an economic driver in terms of improving our community experience. The other thing I think public art does is it levels the playing field for art. I don't know about any of you, but I have been to art museums, and I'm looking at a piece, and I'm wondering what in the heck is going through the minds of that artist, and the person standing next to me is talking about the beautiful expression of color, and I'm thinking, oh, goodness. I think public art really gives us an opportunity to step back, look at a piece in a beautiful natural setting, look at it upside down, look at it from every angle, and think about it. And it levels the playing field for art, takes away that intimidation factor. Art can also serve as a function. And I wanted to give this an example. A community that I travel to quite frequently is Bend, Oregon. And they have really embraced the concept of roundabouts. They have over 20 of them. They have a local group of volunteers that raise funds to place public art in their roundabouts, so much so that they have created this roundabout art tour. I was there last weekend, and I was meeting a friend for breakfast, and he said, I'll meet you at the Victorian. He said, you know the one, it's by the Flaming Chicken Roundabout. I knew exactly what he was talking about, and that's the Flaming Chicken Roundabout. It's a kinetic piece, it flows in the wind. We happen to be embarking upon our first major roundabout in Rockford at Main and Auburn. We are blessed to have a sculpture, a monument, right there at the corner. So who knows? Maybe that's the start of our public art in our roundabouts in Rockford. Love it or hate it, art most definitely invokes emotion in people. You wonder what was going on in the mind of the artist when they created the piece. It sets the tone for the experience that you're going to have where that piece of art is placed, and there's no place that is more evident in this piece called The Juggler. Now, The Juggler is a piece that welcomes you as you come to the Discovery Center Museum. It was created by a Rockford native who now lives in Iowa. His name is David Foster. It's a kinetic piece. It's steel. It is aluminum. It blows in the wind. It's got bright color. And if you've ever been to the Discovery Center Museum, there is a lot of movement, a lot of color, and a lot of laughter. And you could probably get that indication from the piece that greets you at the door. As I was preparing for our talk this morning, one of the speaker tips was to keep it real. And so I thought I would confess right now, I am not an artist. I was not an art major. If you ever had me on your Pictionary team, you'd never pick me again because you would not be able to figure out what I drew. But my experiences at the Park District have led me to love public art, and I want to tell you a little bit about that story. 24 years ago, I was the liaison with the maintenance team who were working with our Art in the Parks Committee, which I'll talk about in a little bit, that were starting to place public art in our parks. So the guys had to prepare the site and would assist with the installation. So we get the drawings to review those pieces, and we had a piece, I'll never forget, it came in, and the guys came and said, "You're not going to believe this, Jody. This is two poles stuck in the ground. One's got a deer head on it. One's got a fish head on it. Somebody calls this art and somebody's going to pay for this? Are you kidding me?" Well, I had the opportunity to meet Bob McCauley. I don't know if anybody knows Bob. Bob was the director of the art department at Rockford College. And he was creating a piece that he said had everything to do with the location in which the piece was going to be located. It wasn't two poles in the ground. It was two totemic sculptures. They're beautiful. They're copper. One features a sturgeon. One features a white-tailed deer. And they symbolize the abundance of wildlife that comes together when two bodies of water meet. Inlet markers is actually installed back in 1990 down on the rec path, and it is right where Spring Creek and the Rock River meet, exactly where that abundance would come together, and the whole thing makes sense. These two pieces are now, they're copper, they're totemic, they arise out of the ground very simply and elegantly. They are naturally patina, so they blend in with the surroundings. You may notice them, you may not, but that's the beauty of public art. So the next time you're on the rec path, watch for inlet markers. We do, in Rockford, have an extensive public art collection. And as I've said, you've probably driven by these a million times not knowing what they were. Most of the pieces have been donated by people in the community. We're very, very blessed by their generosity. The Rockford Park District has a very close relationship with the Art Museum, who assists us with the collection. We have 31 pieces in the collection in total, and 16 of those pieces start at the Rockman on the south and end at the Flame on the north. The Art in the Parks Committee was instrumental in really bringing art to our parks. They started in the late 80s. They raised funds to put public sculpture in our parks. They donated three significant pieces we're going to talk about today, including the Rockman, inlet markers, and sightseeing. They continue to be in the community. They support, they advise, they counsel, they assist the park district when people want to donate art to us, and we are forever grateful for the concept that they started all those years ago. The first piece that was actually placed in public parks is called Cape Variations. It was placed back in 1973. It is an aluminum piece, and it's significant. It's 44 feet long. It was donated by a festival group back in 1973 in one of our parks. And I'm wondering if anybody knows where this piece was and who the group was. Anybody? Beatty Park. Beatty is. And it's been there since 1973. What you need to know about this piece is John Henry is a significant public sculptor. He has pieces all over the world, over 2,000 pieces. And when you start to learn more about our public pieces in the parks, as you travel about, you're going to see pieces and you're going to say, "I wonder if that's John Henry." This happens to be one, it's called Bridgeport, and it is in Chicago at the Thompson Center. And you will find yourself, as you become more aware of the public art we have in our community, seeing these pieces all over the United States in very big cities. And guess what? We're lucky enough to have those pieces right here in Rockford by that very same artist. Another piece that's significant and we're very proud of is called Suspended Motion. Suspended Motion was actually created by Gene Horvath, and he is a local artist. Gene did pass away a few years ago, but we are blessed to have seven of his pieces in the public collection. This piece was actually commissioned by the Coolers for the 10-year anniversary of the Engel Corporation. They sold the property, and they needed a place for the sculpture, and we are blessed that they came to the Park District and said, hey, we'd like to put it on Park District property, and we said, sure. It was placed there in 2004, well before the conservatory was complete, but now it is a piece of the puzzle that looks like it belonged there all along, and it is a significant welcome to the Sinisippi Riverfront. This piece is a rather sizable piece, 5,200 pounds, 16 feet tall, great welcome to a beautiful area. Another really fun piece, and I picked this piece because Ed was from Purdue, but it is called Animotive Kinetic. It's by Bob Mangold. Bob is out of Denver. He has works from Denver to Tokyo and everywhere in between, and he does a lot of the kinetic work that you see, and again, that moves in the wind. This is an example of what we have in Rockford. It was donated by Tom and Darlene first. Tom and Darlene actually purchased this piece to put in their yard. Tom tells the story of his children, his grandchildren, and people driving by to see the piece. When they sold the property, Tom and Darlene came to the Park District and wanted to donate it to the Park District. We put it in front of the conservatory to welcome people to the Sinisippi Riverfront. It is kinetic. It brings a sense of fun and whimsy. It blows in the wind. It's a beautiful piece just to sit on the bench and enjoy. Bob does work that's in color. Some of it's stainless. This is a piece in Pickett Park that is at Purdue University. So again, we have pieces that are all over the world. So as you're traveling about, you see a piece that looks similar to this, it's probably something done by Bob Mangold. One of the most popular pieces we have in the collection is called Sightseeing. It's by J. Stewart Johnson. This piece was actually placed back in 1991 behind the public library. And unfortunately, we had some challenges with vandalism. And we had to remove the piece from that location that was originally selected. This was donated by the Art and the Parts Committee some years ago. And as I talked about the roundabouts, we are now calling the garden in which the sightseer has been placed at the Sinisippi Riverfront the Sightseeing Garden. Again, identifying that art with a location. The sightseeing is creating some problems for us down at the conservatory already. If you are aware of all of the action that's going on down there, we've been under construction for a couple of years, and the outdoor gardens are just in the process of being completed, but they're still under construction. And so we had some people coming and visiting the conservatory this past year, and they wanted to go out in the gardens. And we said, I'm sorry, it's a construction zone, you can't go out. And the customer became a little bit aggressive with our staff and said, well, that guy's out there. They're that lifelike. J. Stewart Johnson is a famous international sculptor. He has a piece that recently left Chicago, and I wonder if anybody knows what that one was. Marilyn. He did the Marilyn piece. She stood 26 feet tall, and she was downtown in Pioneer Court on the Magnificent Mile. She did bring some controversy with her. She did bring some vandalism with her, and she's on her way now to Palm Springs. But Stewart Johnson is really known for his lifelike, life-size bronze pieces. And the piece we have sightseeing is a multiple. And I'm told there are three of them. One of them is in Key West, Florida. So if you're there and you see sightseeing, it's not been stolen. It's a multiple. There are three of them. Another piece that we have in the collection that is a new addition to the collection is called Wildflower. And this piece was created by he was a Chicago artist, Jerry Peart. Jerry actually came to Rockford. He was commissioned by an anonymous donor for the conservatory. He was selected because of his colorful work. We wanted something that created a sense of a pop of color to encourage people as they were coming to the conservatory to kind of give them a taste of what they were going to see when they got into that exhibition house. So he came to Rockford before the conservatory was even constructed, and he created this piece that he named Wildflower, and we think it's absolutely perfect, and it is that splash of color that we were hoping for. What's really neat about this piece and Jerry's work is that color. It's whimsical, it's fun, it's powerful. When you look at this piece, because of the way it's placed, any way that you go around that planter that it is placed, it looks different. So the top picture I have there is from the parking lot, and I'm looking north. And you can see that that's got sort of a round, kind of a round shape to it. The other photo in the bottom is I'm standing at the front of the conservatory. You see the little cock-a-doodle-doo on the top, and you see a whole different look to the sculpture. It's completely different. This piece has been in place since November of 2011. And again, now you know Jerry's work. Jerry does very colorful aluminum sculpture. And these are two pieces that you might be familiar with, or as you're traveling, you might see. but you're going to know it's Jerry's work. First one is Blue Geisha, and Blue Geisha was commissioned by the late Lee Miglin for Triangle Plaza near O'Hare Airport. 37 feet tall, that piece is. The other piece that I have selected for the presentation today is called The Garden. It's at the Carillion. It's in Charlotte, North Carolina. And again, when you see these pieces, you'll now know that this is Jerry's work. And guess what? We have it here in Rockford. Very, very neat. As I'm wrapping up here, I'm going to close out with two of our most popular pieces. And the first is the Rockmen Guardians. The Rockmen Guardians are very popular. You probably have a coloring sheet that your children have done at school, or it's featured in a calendar that you have. They are created by Milwaukee artist Therese Agnew. Therese Agnew is a short little girl who carries a big, big punch. These two pieces, two of the pieces came in 87, two came in 88. They were donated by John and Linda Anderson and the Art in the Parks Committee, who raised the funds for them. They are referred to as the Vikings and the Transformers and the Gladiators, but they're the Guardians, the Rockmen Guardians. 12 feet tall, 6,000 pounds, rough granite, and Therese actually created this with the assistance of many of our local labor unions who came together to help create the pieces with her, along with our staff, and they are most definitely a Rockford favorite. And then their symbol. We have our very own Lieberman here in Rockford. This is a 47 foot tall, five stories the pieces, 17 tons of steel, made of recycled drums and metal and pieces. And actually, for those of you who may not know, the piece was actually located in downtown Rockford for many years. The city had decided to change the concept of downtown. They closed off North Main Street, made it a walkable mall, and put the sculpture there. It was actually created for Rockford. Well, people didn't like the fact that they couldn't drive through the location any longer, and they took it out on symbol. And as I was preparing for this presentation today, I was going through some old newspaper articles, and there are stacks of letters to the editor. People were not happy. We worked with the city of Rockford, found a new home for symbol, and symbol has been down on the Sinisippi Riverfront since 1984. And when I read back on Lieberman's speech when he came and dedicated the piece, he said he hoped that this piece would be an uplifting sculpture that would become the symbol of Rockford, and it was not when it first came to us in 1978. But I think we can all agree that it probably is now. It is the piece that greets people as they're coming downtown or heading north, and we should be very proud of having a Lieberman piece in our community. Alexander Lieberman has done work from from New York to Russia and everywhere in between. He is a significant public sculptor. If you want to learn more about our pieces, I've only selected a couple for the presentation today. We do have a sculpture tour. It's self-guided that you can get on our website, or we do have tours that go through the Nicholas Conservatory and Gardens, but I encourage you to take some time and enjoy them. And as I'm wrapping up, you think about public art, again, thinking about our infrastructure, thinking about how important they are, and if quality of life is really, really important to us. The photo on the left is any town USA that has a recreation path along a riverfront, and it looks nice enough. But the photo on the right is our community. It's Rockford, Illinois. It's our symbol. So keep that in mind. I encourage you to explore and enjoy your public art collection. Cezanne said that art is a harmony parallel with nature, and I can't think of any place that is more prevalent than in our Rockford community with the public art collection. So explore and enjoy. Thank you.
Well, that was Jody Carroll talking to us about the importance of public art and how it enhances our communities. And also, she mentioned the traffic circles. There's, you know, the one in the 406 there in Welland. You know, great place to drop a piece of public art right in the middle of that. They've landscaped it, just put in a piece of art, just kind of, you know, finish it off. This is Culture Afternoon on 4680Q. This is Christian Bell, and we're going to talk about public art and the 1% formula. And I have a very distinguished guest on the show again with us, Mr. Steve Wilson. He's been on the show before, and he has a gallery here on Queen Street. Probably the best contemporary Niagara Falls artist that we've had on the scene. He's an incredible artist. I've just pulled up TripAdvisor here. Sorry, Steve, I'm going to get into the nasty details here. So someone from Art Shopping says about Mr. Steve Wilson's gallery and studio. What a lovely art gallery on a cute street in Niagara Falls. The owner was on site and is a very talented yet humble man. He displayed various artists' works as well as his own. I even bought one of his, which I love. Another person says it's a must-see. Great gallery with lots of variety with something for everyone. A must-see if you're in the area. Curator is very knowledgeable and friendly. So welcome to the show, Steve. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Oh,
great to hear those comments on TripAdvisor because we need to get people in the downtown area.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I was just going through some of them. Pulled up your name. I just put Steve Wilson Niagara Falls and TripAdvisor popped up. But yeah, you're a very distinguished artist. I mean, you belong to some of the art organizations in the province, and you've been commissioned to do all kinds of great work. And now you've got the studio in Niagara Falls, which has been a really, really good thing to happen downtown there. So
yeah, I'm really happy to be down in the Niagara Falls area. My art-based clientele is mainly from Toronto, but now that I've moved here, it's sort of starting from scratch again in a way. But yeah, I'm with quite a few organizations across Canada as well. So,
well, that's great. Yeah, yeah, and you're right across from the station, so we've got the Culture Central down here.
Yep.
So today we're going to talk about a little bit with you about public art, which was art in public spaces, or what I like to refer to as art out on the streets. Public art 24/7. It's free for the people to come and enjoy, experience their day-to-day walks around town from one place to another. What's your take on public art? Like, what do you see as important?
I think it's a must for cities. It's an economic growth for everybody. In this day and age, with social media, everybody wanting to take selfies, it really brings people down to an area just to do the selfies, post it on social media. While they're downtown or wherever the public art is, people are also shopping, so it's good for the economy as well. And it revitalizes and livens up the area. So there's a lot of win-wins. I know there's been some naysayers with, you know, the expense of it, but the expense is really very minimal compared to what it brings to the area itself.
Yeah, that's true. And some of the art is temporary, some of it's permanent, some are low budgets, they're small, affordable and easy forms of public art. Some are could be $50,000 to $100,000 installations.
Oh, yeah. Right.
So, yeah. So, and then, you know, do you see a lot of potential for public art here in Niagara Falls?
I would like to think that it's a possibility. They have done a few public art pieces lately that I've been witnessing. I've only been in the Niagara Falls area for a year now, but from what I've seen, there has been an interest in it with the Wheat Paste Project and the mural project, and even the utility box wraps that Sonia Wilkinson had just finished doing. It's not only good for the city and the economic structure as well, but look at things like the Archer. And I think it was 67, the city then paid $100,000 to Henry Moore for the Archer. In the downtown Toronto across in front of City Hall, people were up in arms about paying that much money for a sculpture back then. But like, it's, look at the worth of it now, the value of it now. It's in the millions. So it's a good investment for the city as well. You've got New York with the Love Sign by Robert Indiana. Everybody has to stop by there, take pictures with themselves sitting in that deal with the love. Chicago's Cloud Gate by Anish. People are always right in front of that taking selfies, so it brings people down. I mean, it's almost like a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it. And a lot of cities have invested in it without any regrets. I mean, and some of those are very expensive projects, so we have to figure out how we're going to pay for them. Niagara Falls has a very fixed budget. People don't want necessarily to pay big money for art out on the streets from the budget. So what we've noticed is there's dozens of Canadian cities here around Canada that are using this sustainable no new taxes formula called 1% for public art. Yeah, which is 1% from a civic construction budget to put art on the property to enhance the civic property and to perhaps maybe set the tone before going in. I mean, we would like to see public 1% for public art down at the new cop shop they built several years ago. You know, with a nice setting of tone there before someone goes in. Everybody's a little bit anxious about the police station. Put some art out front. I've seen other cop shops that had that. Victoria, BC has two pieces of art at their cop shop. Yeah, it sort of like mellows down your anxiety going into the police station. Nobody really likes going to that place. Usually you're being booked and you're in handcuffs, but yeah, that's 1% for public art. That's a fantastic no new taxes way of getting art. What do you think of that approach?
Sure, yeah, it beautifies the area as well, and like you said, it takes away some of the pent up feelings you have going into a place if there's something nice out front to enjoy as you're going in. Not that if you're going in handcuffs, you're going to take the time to enjoy it, but,
yeah, you go in the back.
You know what I'm talking about. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but, yeah, there's a good opportunity there. You build a new bus station, you know, 1% of that puts art on the property.
And yeah, I mean, they've been doing it with developers for a long time. If a developer wants to put in a whole subdivision somewhere, they have to allocate so much for to put a school in. They have to have so much as a green area. So, and it works fine for them, and nobody thinks anything of it. So why not just include a 1% to have public art as well? So it just enhances the whole area.
Exactly, yeah. And I know that the cop shop down here was a really nice green building. It was LEED Silver, the LEED Energy design building. Uh-huh. They spent lots of money making that a green, sustainable building, but neglected to put a piece of art in, and we're right at the busiest intersection in Niagara, 420 and Stanley. A great opportunity to put something in, you know, maybe something tall, something noticeable, a landmark. Uh-huh. Yeah, so that's the 1%. And then there's an art reserve fund that you have that you store some of the monies, because sometimes it might not be desirable. Like the bus station they built here in Niagara Falls was way out in the way past Kaler. I don't even know where it is. It was a remote location. They can transfer it to somewhere where art is required, and so they would have to put the money in an art reserve fund before that happened. Also, the city could put funds in from the arts and culture budget in there, just in the art, so in case they had, you know, some anniversary, city anniversary, they wanted to install some temporary public art, they would have the monies in the art reserve fund. So usually you do a 1% for public art and an art reserve fund that stores all the monies for cultural events that need funds. When the time comes, you got it, not rather than scrambling around.
That's true, yeah, because by the time you figure out where you're going to get the funds from and then put the call out, it's getting kind of late for anything worthwhile to be done in a short time period, so.
Yeah, nothing gets done because it's not set up, but I'd done a proposal to the City of Niagara Falls and the Greater Niagara Region
This was way back in 2013. Yeah, and that was regarding, you know, getting the 1% for public art and an art reserve fund. Well, I think I struck that from at that time, the Sustainable Living Niagara Falls Committee. That's what I called this ad hoc thing that we'd prefer. But we, you know, we saw that they needed the public art at the 420 Stanley police station. There was no provision.
And nothing ever happened of it?
There was no provisions for art, for public art at that location. Nothing ever happened. I got good feedback. They all liked the idea, but they said it was too late. But I still don't see them doing it. What, 13? This is 5 years later. 6 years later.
Yeah. It's never too late to install public art somewhere. It's, you know,
yeah,
just enhances the area, enhances the city. So I don't understand that, that way of thinking.
Yeah, allocating 1% of a construction budget of all new civic buildings is allocated for new public art. Some of the cities that we saw that were doing a percent for public art were Victoria, Vancouver, Surrey, Calgary, Edmonton, Thunder Bay, Ottawa.
Ottawa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ottawa's one of the first, or they are the first. Hamilton, Toronto, the entire province of Quebec does this. The whole province. 1% for public art. That's how you go when you go to Quebec, Montreal, Quebec City. You see art everywhere.
That's progressive thinking.
Very progressive. The entire I put that in capitals when I did this. In Moncton, St. John, the list just goes on and on. I think Lethbridge, London, Ontario, does it? Oakville is doing it. Of course, out west. So, Seattle.
Niagara Falls really needs to catch up then.
Yeah, we're kind of on the bus way at the back with the horizon way in the distance. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got to get there.
And such an important city like Niagara Falls, you figure they would be one of the forerunners of these ideas. But
yeah, I always
maybe
think
we'll get there.
Yeah, I always think if you had Niagara Falls in Europe, if this falls was in Europe, they would have this. It would be a lot of arts and culture around,
right?
Especially since we get 18 plus million visitors a year, we need, you know, the public art installments could enhance their experience. They could go on cultural walks and tourism where they can see all these sculptures. There is a public art database right now on the city of Niagara Falls website, which you have to give them credit, and I put a lot of pressure on them. I'm not taking credit, but they needed a public art database, like where you could visit and see all the public art we have, and then either you could have tourism, or you could have, you know, around cultural settings, you could have corporate events, like at the Niagara Falls History Museum. They have a banquet room there that seats 150 people.
Yeah,
and it's very affordable. It's a reasonable price, and there's cultural installations there, and you can experience that with. But back to the 1%. It was well received, the idea, by the city and the region, and the timing's right. I mean, There's probably some civic buildings going to be going up. We missed a few. The hospital's one that I'm thinking about. The new hospital here in Niagara Falls, we can't miss that one. That has to be 1% public art. That'll be have many the cities involved, the region, and probably the province. But we need to get that one. They might not give us 1%. It's a huge budget, but we'll take a sliding scale, 0.5%. You know. But we can't let that one get away.
Right, yeah, because they started doing some part of public art projects, like the Wheat Paste Project and the Mural Project downtown, and I hate to see anything that starts to get a bit of momentum just die. I mean, you know,
yeah,
you're on the right track.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it doesn't require any more funding. And also, we'd like to propose that they up the ante of arts funding from its present, I don't know, I think of the arts, the recreation and arts, recreation and culture budget. I think it's called Recreation, Parks, and Culture.
Uh-huh.
The department here, they have roughly about $2.5 million budget, but arts and culture typically gets anywhere between 1.5 to 4% of that money.
Okay.
Yeah, we want to up the ante to 10, maybe 15. More, a more realistic funding model for the arts. A lot of cities, what they do, Vancouver, for example, they give a quarter of a percent of their entire city budget to arts and culture, which isn't asking for a lot, but it does, like Niagara Falls, I calculated, it would come out to $200,000.
And that's, you know, a very low figure to even ask for. So.
It's still low, and it's reasonable and doable. So we need to...
But it gets things going.
Yeah. We need to up the ante.
Uh-huh.
So those are some of the things we need. We need the 1% for public art. We need the Art Reserve Fund. And we need to up the ante on the funding model for the arts. Yeah, so those are some reasonable requests, wouldn't you say?
Well, yeah, hopefully the city might revisit some of those issues. You know, it's worth the time anyways to look at them.
What do you think that why they have such apprehension to funding the arts? Is it unknown? Is it they're not sensitized? Are they afraid?
I'm not really sure. Are they afraid? There's been so many studies showing how the arts can enhance a city, an area, the culture. I don't know where the apprehension is.
I know
it's maybe it's just lack of thinking about it. You know, and somebody needs to keep putting it in their face, saying, you know, there's a benefit to this, and these are the benefits, and think about it.
Well, you said that we talked earlier. You mentioned that funding for the Winter Festival of Lights had been increased.
Yeah, that's what I hear. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
that's an art form in itself.
It is,
but it's not a permanent art form, right? But it does bring the tourists down.
Mm-hmm. It brings the tourists down in the winter when we needed them.
Only in the evenings as well. So you need to do something that's permanent and mm-hmm. can be visited any time of year, any time of day.
Have you been down to some of the Winter Festival of Lights from previous years?
Yeah, I've been there down there a few times, and I've enjoyed it. I really have.
Okay, so as a professional artist, you thought it's done really well, and it's we're getting all the bang out of our buck for that down there.
Well, at the time I visited, I didn't really know what the budgets were or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed it as a tourist because I was living in the Toronto area, so I came down here for it specifically, and we went on the I think it was the Hornblower mm-hmm. boat tour to watch it, and yeah, we really enjoyed it. So
the festival,
and it got us down spending our money in downtown Niagara Falls mm-hmm. and, you know, the surrounding area, so mm-hmm. it did what it was meant to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the recent festivals have all been $1.2 million budgets.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of... They had, in all fairness, they used to use incandescent light bulbs, and then they had to transition to LED. And
right.
They had millions and millions of light bulbs and strands and... Mm-hmm. of lighting, so they had to do that as well as modernize the exhibits and the you know, the other the new installations that they were going. They had to continually update, and some things they had to. They used to use the Disney characters.
Okay,
I don't know if you were aware of that. And they had Disney down there for years. The Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs and that was a fixture right down in where they have the concert, the New Year's Eve concert, that big green space. They put them in there.
Oh, is that the drive through?
Yeah,
where people would drive through and see all the lights set up.
No
difference.
That's Dufferin Islands. This is over right by the falls. But Disney didn't charge for years, and then they all of a sudden said that they wanted some royalties or some monies. And of course, the festival, this was back when the festival didn't have quite the funding that they do now. They said, "Well, we don't can't pay for it." So Disney took them away, and then the next the gentleman that was running the festival at the time, he's not there anymore, but he brought in some really nice handmade illuminated things from South Korea.
Okay.
They were like real characters, and they were really quite, actually I quite enjoyed it, and I thought it was creative and arty, and but the, he took a hammering because the people wanted that Disney stuff. But I always said that the Disney stuff was lazy, and we needed to do some of our own stuff.
Yeah.
Which they eventually did with some of the fountains at Dufferin Islands and the synchronized music and some of the RD productions there. But we're still waiting, to see some really good RD stuff down there with some artists involved. Rather than just pot lighting on a building or strands of light or lit up characters that some company makes. Those are all fine, but just one or two installations that show that the artist's imagination is at work.
Definitely need something down there, and need to figure out how to fund it, the taxpayers aren't on the hook for it. And that 1% sounds like a really great idea, and it's working in so many other cities. So why can't it work here?
Exactly. It would spruce up the town. It would make it a bit more livable, it put us on the map. And if that attracts investment and young professionals, and that, mm-hmm. that'll grow our economy by making, what I always say, making our city more approachable.
That's what
public art does.
Yeah.
So does fixing up the streets and keeping them clean and the infrastructure and stuff. That makes us approachable. But arts and culture helps do that too.
Mm-hmm.
They've done all the enhanced city streetscaping. They've done the enhanced benches and the steel grates around the trees on the sidewalks, and Unistone and stuff like that. But let's get some public art in there. They've gone to that level. The next level's public art, and there's the sustainable model that we both agree on, the 1%. Uh-huh. And then the public art reserve fund that's going to keep the monies in there so that we always have arts and culture money. And it's in trust. They can't touch it. Council can't say, "Oh, we need to get some of that money." No, it's in trust. You can't touch it. It's arts and culture money.
Right, exactly. Because there's always going to be some maintenance on any public art that has to happen. And, if it's there in trust, like you said, it's something that can be drawn from, and you don't have to worry about the public art just disintegrating or, becoming an eyesore.
Proper maintenance program, for sure.
Right.
The artist that's commissioned to do the public art, they recommend in writing that it's part of the deal. You give us a maintenance strategy for this particular piece, this bronze piece, this marble piece, the limestone.
And usually when they put tenders out to artists for public art, there's usually like a 5-year period that they have to allocate so much funds for the maintenance of it. And just the normal day-to-day wear, cleaning, whatever, if whatever is needed.
Some pieces need more maintenance than others. It might be wood, and it deteriorates. They have that wood one up at St. Mm-hmm. Pat's Church, just up the street from you, that big, mm-hmm. with the snakes at the bottom and stuff. That one is going to need some maintenance, constant maintenance.
And resealing and everything else.
Whereas maybe a marble or a limestone sculpture doesn't need quite as much maintenance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just the odd vandalism you have to clean off, but most of the time it's wearable.
Now I noticed some of the places in my observations, like up Welland, and even here, they were putting up public art, and they started putting in flowers around it. They dig a bed.
Okay.
Dig a bed, but they still had their flower culture going on. And
yeah, well, it also enhances the art too, and it sort of keeps people at a certain distance
exactly.
for their selfies. You know, they can still take the selfies, but mm-hmm. they're not up there destroying the piece too.
Yeah. Okay. Well, really appreciate you coming on, Mr. Wilson, Steve Wilson. What's the official title of your gallery?
Oh, Steve Wilson Studios and the Gallery.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that because it is a gallery. It has your work, a lot of your work in there.
It's fantastic. Also my studio as well. So
exactly.
Yeah. And so please you can come in and watch me work.
Got to get down because the body of work you have in there is unbelievable. I mean, it's every time I come in there, there's something new. There's not only your work. You carry maybe six other different artists, prolific artists down there.
Yeah, and I have interesting group shows there. So one show is coming down this Saturday, a new show is going up on Tuesday. So I change it up every 4 weeks. So there's always something new to see. And
yeah, and if you're in art, I mean, like, go down, talk to Steve. He'd be happy to talk to you. And we're really fortunate to have you down here in the Falls. You moved down from Brampton, didn't you?
Yeah. Toronto, Brampton area.
Yeah,
just lived in Toronto all my life. And then, so I moved down here just last year and opened up beginning of this year.
Is Brampton more serious about arts and culture than we are?
It was, and then they got the new mayor in, new board. Not Brown, no. Before that, we had Linda Jeffries. They had Linda Jeffries come in, and there was issues with the Brampton Arts Council. Anyways, long story short, the arts sort of all of a sudden just died there. And
but the funding
they're
was
having
cut?
Trouble. The funding was cut, in a certain way, there was new ways of applying for funding, which created some issues. All of a sudden, the artists started moving out because it just became too hard to even work there. I mean, artists struggle anyways, but it became too hard to get any funding or even any recognition or advertising. And the artists started moving out, and now the downtown area is, it's undergoing some changes, and some of the businesses aren't happy down there. So.
Does they look after their heritage there downtown in Brampton, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah, it's nicely restored and heritage is maintained.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Correct.
That's another thing where we need to focus on here. I've talked about that here many times. The heritage here needs to be taken more seriously. It's another art form. The way they used to build when they used to build buildings, art went into the buildings. Now buildings that are built are just, there's no art. They're more cookie cutter.
There's some interesting buildings being put up, but they're far and few between, and, you know, there's both good and bad for it. Like, I only see the good, but then there's always the people that are worried about how it looks in the area because it's too modern for them, or, you know. Yeah, there's always everybody's opinion, so you got to try to just go with the punches on it, right?
Okay, well, again, thanks a lot, Mr. Wilson. You're a pleasure to have you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You're awesome. Thanks for taking the time. Yeah. I know you got to get the gallery and studio open soon. What time do you open at? 11, 12?
At noon today.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, I'll come down and visit, see what you've got. I mean, it's an amazing place. That's down on 4681.
4681, yeah.
Queen Street.
4681 Queen Street.
Beautiful Queen Street, beautiful people. Thank you.
Yeah, right across from 4680, the Q.
And so. Taps.
Yep.
A beautiful beer. A
lot of cute little businesses down there, so it's worth dropping by and exploring all the other businesses.
Yeah, we got you and I got to get to Taps for a beer.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, well, you have a great day. We'll see you soon and talk to you soon.
Good. Thanks for having me.
Okay, you're amazing. artists, keep up the good work. It's going to get as many people down there as we can.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Mr. Wilson.
Thanks. Take care.
Okay,
bye.
Cheers. Bye. Well, thank you. This is Culture Afternoon with Christian Bell, 4680Q, right down here in downtown Niagara Falls, home of Taps Brew Pub, 4680Q, online direct radio, and Steve Wilson Gallery and the studio right across the street. Beautiful place. And also like to mention Camp Cataract, some new establishment where you can get food, basic food and some drinks, and enjoy some culture and some arts down there. That's a new place that's opened up, Camp Cataract. Go down and check that out for sure. And Steve Wilson Gallery in the studio, I really have to thank Mr. Wilson for coming on the show, talking to us about public art and the importance of that, and 1% for public art, which is a sustainable, no new taxes way to fund public art. 1% of all civic or city construction budgets allocated to putting art on those properties, or if it's a remote location, move the art to a location where art in public places or art is required to spruce up that area. Maybe down the train station where the GO trains are coming in now, down by the tracks there. Let's show them some fanfare. Let's see some art down there, some stuff on poles and stuff, spinny art banners. Like, we really have to step it up so we can move some art down there. So thanks again, Mr. Wilson. He's a fantastic artist, full-time award-winning visual artist. He works with oils and acrylics and other types of even resins that jump out off the canvas. He's into really dramatic stuff. He's into social commentary. We heard him talking about, you know, people with taking selfies and stuff. Well, public art's going to help the selfie thing, give you another option down here. So thanks again, Steve. And we also heard from Jody Carroll, spoke from down in the States there about the merits of public art. Thanks for tuning in, Christian Bell, Culture Afternoon, 4680Q. Let's hear a little bit of music here just to wrap up the show. This is Culture Affair.
Yep. Check. Let's do it. Yo, moving stick, so I'ma rhyme like a lunatic. We make a hit with an unassuming wit. The corporation conjured up the bass and the tempo. My name is Lift, that's the intro, now let's go. Flow of life, throwing strife into the mix, to the pick. A condition in the word is sick. The powers that be, power in me to speak upon stress and strife that I see every day. Want to speak upon culture of fear up in your ear. They telling us terrorists about to strike. Maybe tonight, right? Let me just back up slowly with critical analysis of those who control me. Used to be we just had a screen in the crib on the TV. Now we carry screens when we leave. Laptop, smartphone, now we're never alone. New affliction, I call media dough. On the low, famine is the programming. Wanna watch your favorite show because it's so slamming. Hold hands and let's gaze into the beautiful glare. While we're here, so we're immersed in this culture of fear. You know what? Man, terror alert on orange. Yo, Garza, it's been on orange since like 2001, G. Could a brother like myself maybe get yellow just for like a couple weeks or something, you know what I'm saying? We taking this from Seattle to the world, y'all. Brace yourself. Yup. Fear the
IRS, fear the INS, fear God. More afraid of a credit card than a terror squad. With the yard, we're stepping with weapons overseas. MasterCard and Visa won't allow me to breathe. They deceive, the enemy is in the fine print. They assassinate silent with no single assailant. Walls I'm scaling to get a view of the blue sky. Beautiful till a couple choppers flew by. Do I represent an element, a hint, a sentiment that you feel on the low for real? Deal starts with a smile, concludes with a handshake. Physical to alter your subliminal landscape. Leave thinking I can really trust that guy. To be honest, kid, you should've really punched that guy. Now it's Operation Shankabanka. Thank you for the load. See you when you come to repossess my home alone at night, sweating. Visions of Armageddon. I never seen a threat. Yeah, I feel threatened. Thoughts on our society designed to spare freedom. Don't succumb to this culture of fear. Yeah. From Seattle to the world, y'all. We're bringing this to the world, y'all. Don't succumb to this culture of fear.
Life is better with art.
Life is better
and culture.
With art. Life is better and culture. Life is better.
But life is hardly worth living without it.
Living without it.
Man cannot live
man cannot
by rock and roll alone.
Rock and roll alone.